laser weapon's muzzle around the front of the cart and sent beams into the helmets of the shooters hiding in the dimple. Her laser pulses struck the EM shields a foot or so in front of the guard's eyes and veered off to the right, cutting shallow trenches in the glass. Because of the intense energy flare caused by the deflection, the troopers couldn't acquire fresh targets. Jack, meanwhile, had scooted between the pair of sledges. The heat waves coming off the carts made the mine entrance simmer and dance in his tri-barrel's open sights. He didn't aim for the four troopers crouched just inside the entrance's overhang. Instead, he aimed at the overhang itself. Aimed and fired, flattening the trigger. Jack swept the front edge of the tunnel roof with laser light. Like dirty green candle wax, the glass turned to liquid and poured down on the troopers. Splashed by at least a ton of molten glass, the guards dropped, slid, and fell to the ground. The liquid cascaded over their helmets, shoulders, and weapons. Though their battle suits protected them from the extreme temperature, they were coated by the molten glass. As the thin layer quickly chilled, it hardened, cementing the segmented plates together. The suit's joints no longer bent. The arms wouldn't move. The legs wouldn't flex. The troopers turned to statues as they tried to rise.
Shit!
Jack's sustained burst had evaporated the mine entrance's overhang, forming a semicircular crater on its threshold. The four frozen troopers were no longer protected by the tunnel ceiling. They fell under a hail of hurled pieces of ore. The two guards in the dimple began picking off the stone throwers one by one. Mildred rose up to a kneeling position and fired, sweeping her laser beam through the Krieglite's tripod legs. She angled the cut so it would fall onto the men in the dimple. The huge lens crashed into the hole. The weight of the housing pinned the troopers. A blinding arc of discharged power was followed by a cloud of oily black smoke. The arc light continued to flash, and the smoke became a plume. Inside the dimple, fire enveloped the guards. The surviving troopers were on the move, and they moved with purpose, as a fighting unit. Jack saw that he and Mildred were about to be flanked.
Follow.
He led Mildred around the end of the sledge line. With energy pulses whistling at his heels, he dove behind the top of water tank. Mildred tried, but couldn't follow because of the intensely focused fire. If she'd made for the water tank, the overlapping pulses would have chopped her into 100 small pieces. She darted instead to the left, rounding the far side of the ore truck. As she made the turn around the back bumper, she got a look at the enemy position. The remaining soldiers had banded together. There were five of them, and they fired from the same spot. They knelt on the flat, just back from the crater where the mine entrance used to be, and where their comrades still lay trapped inside their own glass-glazed battle suits.
Damn it all to hell.
By now, the troopers had to have called for help, which meant reinforcements were probably on their way.
Our luck has run out.
The massed fire from the top of the mine had already accomplished one thing. It had split her and Jack up, which allowed the troopers to concentrate their fire on one or the other position. They started by pouring it onto hers, on the opposite side of the half-loaded ore truck. Everything was okay for a minute or two. Then molten glass began seeping out from under the rear gate. It splashed on the ground, cutting deep pits in the surface. Mildred was forced to abandon her position and move to the front of the wag. Across the compound, she could see Jack, dead white against the rusting steel of the water tank. He was unable to return fire because of the barrage of laser pulses striking the front of the tank. The water remaining inside the toppled cylinder had started to boil. Clouds of white steam rolled up through the splits in the tank's welded seams. He flashed her a hand signal. Five fingers counting down. She nodded back.
Here goes nothing.
Christy put her ear to the door of her windowless cell. Outside in the hallway, she could hear heavy activity. She drew her head back. Something was up. They were mobilizing for something. An attack on some other nearby barony? That was inevitable. None of the Deathlands' self-crowned lords could withstand the power of this army. The destruction of the existing social order was just the first step in a larger plan. From what Ryan had told her, nothing was sacred to Dreda and her sisters. After the invaders had conquered and enslaved the human opposition, they'd use their science to bleed the resources dry, to distort and pervert every existing life form. This same philosophy had led to the destruction of their planet, but they learned nothing from that experience. Each thoughtless, short-sighted step of theirs, by default, dictated the next. The idea that she'd ever participate in the destruction of her own world, become one of their sisters, was absurd. That would have meant discarding the elements that transferred real power, which she knew was internal, a product of the intimate feminine connection with the future and the past. It was a power that Dreda and the sisters had willingly exchanged for the convenience of a bigger, more intimidating shell. Christie knew these women had to be stopped. Now, before they bred themselves and spread like locusts over her deathlands. She had to find and smash their main comp. She had to locate Ryan's seed and destroy that, too, so they couldn't use his offspring, his genetic blueprint, to accomplish their ends. She tried the doorknob. It barely turned before coming to a hard stop. Christie closed her eyes and concentrated, summoning the power of Gaia, the Earth Mother.
Almighty Gaia, please come and assist your needful daughter.
Her need was real, and it was pure in intent. She opened herself to receiving what she had asked for, allowing it to enter her body. The power built slowly, rising through the soles of her feet to the center of her very being. It filled her like a glowing orb. When the sensation peaked, Christie put both hands on the knob and turned. The knob rotated freely. Her face flushed with the exertion, Christie pulled on the knob, and its shattered plasti-steel shaft slid out of the door. She leaned against the door for a moment, lightheaded from the power she had channeled and redirected. Surprisingly, the use of the power didn't drain her. Then she poked a finger into the hole in the escutcheon plate and released the locking mechanism. The door opened a crack. Christie waited until there was a lull in the noise, then opened the door wider. She saw the backs of a pair of troopers hurrying away from her. They were carrying armloads of small canisters. She ducked out of the cell, heading the other way. The corridor branched in three directions before her. She took the right-hand hallway without hesitation. Because Christie had kept track of her position from the moment she entered the domes, she knew that that route was closest to the outside of the complex. Rhina told her that if the comp was linked to the satellite, it would need an antenna to transmit and receive signals, which could mean that it was located in a room with an exterior wall. Even if it wasn't, she had to start somewhere and proceed methodically. She moved along the hall, looking at the doors. From her experience exploring pre-dark redoubts, she guessed that the comp would need a clean room, a place free of radical changes in temperature and free of dust and other contaminants. This dictated using a different sort of gasket seal around the door. It would also dictate a self-contained ventilation system. Evidence of both could be easily seen at a glance. Christie found nothing in the first corridor. All the doors were alike. As she started to follow the next right-hand branch of the hallway, she heard footfalls and rumbling noises coming her way. Turning back, she tried doorknobs until she found one that was unlocked. She quickly ducked into the room and closed the door. A second or two later, the troopers passed outside. When Christie took a moment to look around the room, what she saw puzzled her.
What the hell's going on here?
The place had been ransacked. Equipment and supplies had been dumped onto the floor from shelves along one wall. Whatever the invaders were doing, they were doing it in extreme haste. From the chaos, it looked as if they were preparing for an impending retreat instead of an attack. She slipped back out into the hall and resumed her search. Before she saw the ventilation grate, she felt its warm rush of air on the tips of her hair. It was set high in the wall next to a door. And the door was unlike any other she'd come across. It had a thick, pliable gasket around its entire perimeter, and a locking wheel in its center instead of a knob. When she tried the wheel, it turned easily. The door wasn't locked. She cracked it. She knew she'd found what she had been looking for. The room before her was brightly lit up by ceiling strips, and an entire wall was taken up by a bank of electronic instruments and LCD screens. She shut the door and moved closer to the stacked screens. The images they contained were pictures of Earth taken from space. Not just scans of Deathlands, but the whole planet. Some of the displays used infrared to show temperature gradients of land masses and ocean currents. Others offered analyses of current weather patterns, rock and soil types, and indigenous plant and animal species. Still others pinpointed the locations of scattered human populations. On some of the screens, she could see what looked like individual people walking about between circles of huts, oblivious that they were being observed.
Gaia, damn it!
This unimaginable, all-encompassing view of her world made it seem small and vulnerable.
We're just one big target to them.
One screen in particular caught her eye. It showed clusters of bright points of blue light on a flat gridwork. There were four points to a cluster. Some were so tightly overlain that they could only be distinguished when they moved apart. And the clusters did move independently, as she watched. The grid squares of the overlay were either lime green or fluorescent red. The green squares formed a path that wound through a field of red. They ended abruptly in red. All the blue dots were in